A message from Jim Hoffman. I have created and compiled this audiobook to help you, as a provider, make better decisions in the field. Let's face it, patients do not follow the textbook, and all chest pains are not STEMI. I have been in EMS over 28 years as of the date of this publication, and I have worked in several urban cities, like NYC, New Jersey, and country roads in various states in the U.S. The bottom line is, the patients are the same no matter where you practice EMS. The tricky part is knowing what may be happening with your patients. This is why I wanted to create a resource that focuses on the many differential diagnoses that patients can have. I encourage you to listen to this audio frequently. It's a short 30 minutes or so, and that's just a quick walk on the treadmill once a week. Doing so will slowly move the knowledge needle you have for EMS and make you a better clinician. I hope you find this audio useful, and I encourage you to visit my website for more resources in EMS. Stay safe. Jim. Abdominal pain. Here is a list of diseases and issues that can cause complaints of abdominal pain. This is a common call type in EMS and can be challenging to providers. Abdominal aortic aneurysm. Appendicitis. Bowel obstruction. Cholelithiasis or cholecystitis. Diverticulitis, DKA, gastritis, gastroenteritis, hepatitis, hernia, ischemic bowel, kidney stone, myocardial infarction or ischemia, pancreatitis, pelvic ovarian cyst or PID, peptic ulcer disease, pneumonia, pregnancy, substance abuse, trauma. Things you should consider when assessing patients with abdominal pain. All women of childbearing age should be considered pregnant until proven otherwise. Abdominal pain with syncope in female of childbearing age should be considered an ectopic pregnancy until proven otherwise. Patients with undiagnosed cause of pain or possible need for surgery should have NPO. Consider cardiac etiology of symptoms in patients over 50 years of age, diabetics, and or women with upper abdominal complaints. Indigestion may be the angina equivalent for myocardial ischemia. Older patients with abdominal pain, especially those that are hemodynamically unstable, should be considered critical until proven otherwise. Consider abdominal aortic aneurysm, AAA, in patients with the following characteristics: age 50 years or older, Bruy on auscultation, diminished femoral pulses, lower extremity pain, or pulsatile intra-abdominal mass. Vomiting may be the presenting symptom of serious non-GI tract pathologies. Consider DKA, poisoning, or CNS process. Allergic reaction. Be sure to consider other causes with allergic reaction calls: angioedema, aspiration or airway obstruction, asthma or COPD, cardiac dysrhythmia, congestive heart failure, pulmonary embolus, or shock. Some additional things you should think about with allergic reaction patients. Anaphylaxis symptoms may include respiratory distress, difficulty swallowing, sensation of throat swelling, altered voice, hypotension, or altered mental status. Allergic reactions may occur with only respiratory and gastrointestinal symptoms and have no rash or skin involvement. Angioedema is seen in moderate to severe reactions and is swelling involving the face, lips, or airway structures. May be seen in patients taking angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors, ACE inhibitors, lisinopril, Prinivil or Zestril, benazepril, lotensin, captopril, Capotin. Hereditary angioedema involves swelling of the face, lips, airway structures, extremities, and may cause moderate to severe abdominal pain. Back pain. You must consider both medical and trauma when assessing patients with back pain. While transport is most often the one we can do, we can also manage pain in the field. Follow your local protocols and think of these back pain causes: abdominal aortic aneurysm, acute coronary syndrome, aortic dissection, epidural abscess, herniated disc, kidney stone, metastatic cancer, musculoskeletal strain or muscle spasm, pneumonia, pulmonary embolus, pyelonephritis, vertebral fracture. Check out these suggestions to consider when assessing patients with back pain. Analgesia may be required prior to patient movement. Elderly patients with back pain, especially those that are hemodynamically unstable, should be considered critical until proven otherwise. Back pain in diabetic patients may be cardiac in etiology. Women of childbearing age should be considered pregnant until proven otherwise. Pregnancy or ectopic should be considered. Potential etiologies: abdominal aortic aneurysms may present as isolated back pain or abdominal pain radiating to the back. May present with pulsatile abdominal mass, bruit, and/or diminished lower extremity pulses. Aortic dissection, hypertension, and thoracic back pain. Blood pressure and pulses should be checked in both extremities. Cholecystitis may present as right upper quadrant pain with radiation to back and/or the scapula. Kidney stones may present as unilateral flank pain that radiates to the groin. Sciatica may present as low back pain radiating down a posterior aspect of one leg. Spinal cord compression may present with saddle anesthesia, bowel or bladder dysfunction, lower extremity motor weakness, and decreased reflexes. Shortness of breath, difficulty breathing. Arguably one of the most common calls in EMS. This is where your assessment, history taking, and knowledge of patient care will be vital when treating and transporting these patients. There are various differential diagnoses you should think about. There are also several that are pediatric specific. Keep these in mind during your assessment. Adult: anaphylaxis, asthma, cardiac dysrhythmia, congestive heart failure, COPD, epiglottitis, myocardial infarction, peritonsillar abscess, pneumonia, pneumothorax, pulmonary embolus, upper respiratory infection. Pediatric: asthma, epiglottitis, cardiac dysrhythmia, croup, foreign body aspiration, pneumonia, pneumothorax, retropharyngeal abscess, tonsillitis, upper respiratory infection. Some considerations for patients with difficulty breathing. The benefits of administering supplemental oxygen to patients with exacerbated COPD outweigh the risks of suppressing the hypoxic respiratory drive. This phenomenon does not occur in the acute care or pre-hospital setting. Bronchospasm may be severe enough, especially in pediatric patients where no wheezing is heard on auscultation, as airflow is minimal. When patients present with impending respiratory failure, or when patients continue to deteriorate, treatment should be initiated before transport. Epiglottitis typically presents with sudden onset of sore throat, drooling, stridor, and fever. This is a bacterial infection involving the epiglottis, causing it to swell and partially or totally obstruct the upper airway. Total airway occlusion is a catastrophic possibility that can be precipitated by invasive oral exams, using tongue blades or laryngoscopes, finger sweeps, and/or supine positioning. Pre-hospital treatment includes quiet transportation with the parent or guardian accompanying the child. Oxygen should be utilized if tolerated. It is important to consider the patient's history of or risk for coronary artery disease prior to the administration of epinephrine. For intubated patients, allow for adequate time for exhalation with increased IE ratios. Plan for lower respiratory rates and lower tidal volumes than typical normal levels in patients with asthma or COPD. The goal of treatment should be to maximize medical therapy early to avoid intubation. Consider acute myocardial ischemic event, especially in patients with any chest pain. Burns. While there are no differential diagnoses for burn patients, there are some considerations when treating and transporting you should think about. Remember to always follow your local protocols. Cooling with water is considered useless and potentiates hypothermia if performed outside of the first 1 to 2 minutes from time of exposure. Do not apply ice. Carbon monoxide, cyanide, or other toxic gases may exacerbate the patient's clinical condition. Consider associated carbon monoxide toxicity. Administer high-flow oxygen via face mask. Consider associated cyanide toxicity. Patient may complain of headache, nausea, vomiting, chest pain, dizziness, altered mental status, or a syncopal event. High-flow oxygenation is paramount for these patients. Pulse oximetry measurements may be falsely elevated. Always consider the possibility of abuse, particularly in pediatric patients. Cardiac arrest. While there is not much to think about on this one, be sure to check some additional considerations below. Asystole, pulseless electrical activity, ventricular fibrillation, ventricular tachycardia without a pulse. Considerations: medical versus trauma, estimated downtime, events preceding cardiac arrest, past medical history, current medications, pre-arrival treatment, DNR order. Opioid-associated cardiac arrest. Naloxone is not associated with improved outcome once cardiac arrest has occurred, and its administration is not recommended without ROSC. Attention must be on airway, oxygenation, ventilation, and cardiac arrest care. Patients at risk for hyperkalemia, renal failure, especially if patient has missed scheduled dialysis, DKA, Crush syndrome or rhabdomyolysis, severe burns. Rate of rhythm associated with hyperkalemia may be slow, normal, or fast. Chest pain. This is for non-cardiac etiology chest pain. There is more on chest pain and arrhythmias in the cardiac problem section. Differential diagnosis. Angina. Aortic dissection. Asthma. Bronchitis. Bronchospasm. Cocaine abuse. COPD. Dysrhythmia. Esophageal spasm, esophagitis, marijuana abuse, musculoskeletal pain, myocardial infarction, pericarditis, pneumonia, pneumothorax, pulmonary embolus, rib contusion or fracture, sickle cell anemia crisis. Try to think about these other issues when assessing and treating patients with chest pain. Patients with suspected cardiac chest pain should have the 12-lead ECG performed immediately while on the scene. Patients over the age of 30 with chest pain or any patient with a recent history of cocaine or crack use with chest pain should be considered at risk for cardiac disease. These patients should have the 12-lead ECG performed. An on-scene 12-lead ECG that appears normal or interpreted as normal should never be used to convince a patient that their condition is stable. More than 50% of acute myocardial infarctions will present with a normal ECG. Pain from an aortic dissection may be described as ripping or tearing in nature. In this context, the examination should include bilateral blood pressures along with upper and lower extremity pulse assessments. Patients at risk for pulmonary embolism, patients on oral contraceptives, prolonged immobilization, recent surgery, prior history of clotting disorders may show signs of tachycardia and tachypnea. Cardiac problems. This section is for patients with actual heart problems and arrhythmias. Some major differential diagnosis: angina, aortic dissection, asthma, cardiac arrest, chest wall injury, cocaine abuse, congenital heart abnormality, COPD, esophageal spasm, electrolyte abnormality, GI pathology, marijuana abuse, methamphetamine abuse, musculoskeletal pain, myocardial infarction, pericarditis, pneumothorax, pulmonary embolus. Try to consider the following with these chest pain patients: female, geriatric, and patients with diabetes with myocardial ischemia or infarction often present with atypical symptoms and not frank chest pain. Dyspnea, weakness and fatigue, and jaw pain. Patients with suspected cardiac chest pain should have the 12-lead ECG performed immediately while on the scene. any patient over 35 years of age with chest pain or any patient with a recent history of cocaine or crack use with chest pain should be considered at risk for cardiac disease. These patients should have a 12-lead ECG performed. Patients considered to have an acute coronary syndrome should have aspirin and nitroglycerin administered immediately and transport performed expeditiously. Nitroglycerin is contraindicated for any patient who has taken Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra within the past 24 hours. Chest pain is the most common manifestation of acute MI. Discomfort may be described as burning, heaviness, pain, pressure, tightness, or squeezing. Angina equivalent may include neck, jaw, epigastric pain, nausea, fatigue, shortness of breath, or dyspnea on exertion. 12-lead ECG assessment. Inferior, leads 2, 3, AVF. Septal, leads V1, V2. Anterior, leads V3, V4. Lateral, leads V5, V6, 1, AVL. Posterior, leads V1, V2, V3. Patients with suspected myocardial chest pain and a 12-lead ECG that reflects more than 1 millimeter of ST segment elevation in two or more contiguous precordial leads or a suspected new left bundle branch block should be transported immediately. Patients with acute myocardial infarction and a left bundle branch block are at an increased risk for poor outcome unless aggressively managed. New LBBB may be a clinical marker for a proximal left anterior descending artery occlusion with a significant portion of the left ventricle in jeopardy. An unseen 12-lead ECG that appears normal or interpreted as normal should never be used to convince a patient that their condition is stable. 50% of acute myocardial infarctions will initially present with a normal ECG, non-ST elevation MI. Patients with an inferior MI are at risk for right ventricle infarct, and nitroglycerin should be used with caution as patients are prone to develop hypotension. Nitroglycerin is not contraindicated, but increased caution must be used. Inferior infarctions typically require normal saline IVF boluses, dysrhythmias, some differentials, sinus tachycardia, PSVT, atrial fibrillation, atrial flutter, multifocal atrial tachycardia. Consider the following for SVT patients. Remember to follow your local protocols. Diltiazem may be harmful in patients with a history of pre-excitation syndromes, WPW. Judicious use of cardioversion should be used in patients currently on digitalis or digoxin. Restoration of normal sinus rhythm in a patient who has been in chronic atrial fibrillation without therapeutic anticoagulation increases the risk for embolism. Sedation should be attempted before cardioversion unless the patient is extremely unstable or unconscious. If cardioversion is performed, ensure equipment for airway management is available. Rapid ventricular response with possible accessory pathway conduction that is irregular, wide complex, or polymorphic, WPW with atrial fib, should not be treated with adenosine, beta blockers, or calcium channel blockers, which may increase conduction through the accessory pathway. Cardioversion is the preferred treatment for these patients. Supraventricular tachycardia is the most common dysrhythmia causing cardiovascular instability during infancy. Supraventricular tachycardia with aberrant conduction that produces a wide complex tachycardia is rare in infants and children. Wide complex tachycardia should be treated as ventricular in origin. Signs of unstable patient. Hypotension. Altered mental status. Ischemic chest pain. Acute congestive heart failure. Syncope. Seizure. Consider the following for bradycardic patients. Asymptomatic sinus bradycardia and or first-degree heart block usually do not require any treatment. Symptoms necessitating treatment. Hypotension. Altered mental status. Ischemic chest pain, Syncope. Always consider early application of pacing pads in elderly patients having bradycardic rhythms. Any patient noted to be hemodynamically unstable and in type 2 second degree or third degree heart block should be paced immediately. Provide sedation and analgesia in patients undergoing transcutaneous pacing. Second degree AVB type 2 and third degree AVB may deteriorate to a systole. Lidocaine and amiodarone are contraindicated with these blocks. Patients at risk for bradydysrhythmias: anterior or inferior wall MI, patients taking beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, or digoxin. Consider treatable causes for bradycardia: beta blocker OD, calcium channel blocker OD. Hypoxia is a common etiology for symptomatic bradycardia in children. Therefore, attention to airway is of paramount importance. Sinus bradycardia is a common pre-terminal event in children. Therefore, attention to airway is of paramount importance. Most maternal medications pass through breast milk to the infant, so maintain high index of suspicion for OD toxins. Hypoglycemia, severe dehydration, and narcotic effects may produce bradycardia. Consider the following for ventricular tachycardia with a pulse. When ventricular escape beats are observed in the presence of bradycardia, you should not treat with lidocaine. Escape beats are attempting to sustain the patient. Treat the bradycardia with atropine. If unable to differentiate the rhythm between supraventricular and ventricular, treat as if ventricular. Bolus of lidocaine is more efficacious and safer than lidocaine drips in suppressing ventricular ectopy. Prophylactic lidocaine therapy is not indicated for routine use when PVCs are associated with acute MI. Any dysrhythmia can provoke a pulmonary edema, CHF exacerbation in a patient with a compromised heart. Treat the dysrhythmia first. If patient demonstrates signs of respiratory distress and is considered to be in congestive heart failure or pulmonary edema, obtain 12-lead ECG on scene. If acute injury or infarction noted, immediately transport. Patients with a history of congestive heart failure, liver disease, shock, or advanced age over 70 years old should receive half the normal bolus of lidocaine. Follow your protocols. Consider hypoglycemia in any patient progressing into cardiac arrest. Use of magnesium sulfate is contraindicated in patients with renal insufficiency or on dialysis, except in cases of Torsades. Hyperkalemia is a dangerous electrolyte abnormality and can lead to peaked T waves, PR segment prolongation, and a widening QRS interval. Causes include renal failure, noncompliance with dialysis, acidosis, medications, and cell death as a result of crush or burn injuries. Calcium chloride and sodium bicarbonate are emergently required as treatment. Congestive heart failure, CHF or APE. Any patient noted to be in congestive heart failure should be considered at risk for cardiac disease. Consideration should be given as to the etiology, myocardial ischemia or infarction, or dysrhythmia. Patients should have a 12-lead ECG performed. When hypotension is present in patients suspected of being in congestive heart failure, judicious use of IV fluid is important. Dopamine may be considered as initial intervention in these particular instances. Choking. Differential diagnosis considerations: anaphylaxis, angioedema, asthma, cerebrovascular accident, croup, epiglottitis, foreign body aspiration, upper respiratory infection. Try and also consider other issues with choking patients. Many choking episodes will be resolved prior to EMS arrival on scene. A thorough assessment should be performed on all patients regardless of symptoms. Any infant choking episode associated with a period of apnea or cyanosis should be transported regardless of appearance on arrival. Choking may be an early sign for stroke onset. Aspiration is often associated with a choking episode. This should especially be a consideration in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. In situations where a complete obstruction is below the level of the vocal cords, the only option may be to perform intubation via standard technique and advance the endotracheal tube into a main stem bronchus in an effort to advance the foreign body into that bronchus. Then withdraw the endotracheal tube so the distal end is at typical depth within the trachea and ventilate as usual. Provider will only be ventilating one lung in this instance, but effective oxygenation and ventilation can still occur utilizing a single lung. Convulsions or seizures. Think of these differentials: CNS mass lesions, CNS trauma, CVA, drug intoxication or overdose, drug withdrawal, eclampsia, epilepsy, fever, ages 6 months to 6 years, hyperthermia, hypoglycemia, hyponatremia, hypotension or hypertension, hypoxia, infection, meningitis or encephalitis, metabolic. Some things to consider with seizure patients: do not force objects into the oral cavity during a seizure or during the post-ictal period. Consider a cardiac etiology or stroke in patients over 50 years of age with seizure activity. Partial seizures may involve muscle twitching in an isolated digit or extremity, various neurological complaints, auditory or visual hallucinations, or repetitive movements, chewing, repetitive hand movements, or speech patterns. Complex or generalized seizures are more common and involve full body movements. Diabetic patients, hyperglycemia, and DKA. Differentials for both hyperglycemia and DKA: burns, myocardial infarction, pregnancy, surgery, infection, noncompliance, stroke, or trauma. Hypoglycemia: adrenal insufficiency, inadequate intake, insulinoma, hypothermia, infection or sepsis, or medication overdose. Also consider that blood glucose should be assessed on all patients with an altered level of consciousness. Hyperglycemia resulting in diabetic ketoacidosis may be associated with hyperkalemia. These may result in cardiac dysrhythmias, therefore cardiac monitoring is essential in these patients. Eye and vision problems. While calls for eye or vision problems may seem minor, you must be aware of conditions that might warn you of more critical underlying issues. Eye problem differentials: allergies, foreign body, infection, vision blurred or loss, CVA, glaucoma, or trauma. So, what else should you consider for patients with eye or vision complaints? When injuries are noted to one eye, both eyes should be covered. This will limit bilateral or consensual eye movements. Chemical injuries: bases or lye cause more severe injuries than acids. In both circumstances, the eye should be flushed gently with copious amounts of normal saline. A retinal detachment is a serious threat to the patient's vision and may or may not result from a traumatic insult. The patient may describe seeing flashes of light, floating strands or particles, or a visual field defect described as a shadow or a curtain. Detachment is typically not painful. Unilateral, transient, painless blurred vision may be the warning sign for impending cerebrovascular accident. Unilateral, painless blindness may be the result of an embolic event to the retinal artery. This must be evaluated immediately. Acute glaucoma is an emergency. Patient will complain of severe pain, headache, blurred vision, halos around lights, and nausea and vomiting. Blindness may result. Headache. Some of the various differentials are brain abscess, brain tumor, cerebrovascular accident, cluster headache, encephalitis, epidural hemorrhage, hypertensive crisis, intracerebral hemorrhage, meningitis, migraine, sinus infection, subarachnoid hemorrhage, subdural hemorrhage, tension headache. Some additional things you should consider with headache complaints: migraine headache, typically unilateral and described as pounding or throbbing pain, often associated with photophobia or sensitivity to noise or odors, often associated with blurred vision, nausea, or vomiting, sometimes preceded by an aura. Tension headache. Typically constant band-like pain or pressure. Affects the front, top, or sides of the head. Usually begins gradually and often occurs in the middle of the day. Cluster headache. Recurs over a period of time. Typically intense, one-sided pain described as having a burning or piercing sensation. Usually located behind one eye or in the eye region without changing sides. Persons experience an episode 1 to 3 times per day during a period of time, the cluster period, which may last from 2 weeks to 3 months. Headaches may disappear completely for months or years, only to recur. Often respond to high-flow oxygen via non-rebreather. Sinus infection headache, typically associated with a deep and constant pain in the cheekbones, forehead, or bridge of the nose. Pain usually intensifies with sudden head movement or leaning forward, usually accompanied by nasal discharge, fever, and/or facial swelling. Subarachnoid hemorrhage classically presents as a sudden onset of the worst headache of my life, usually caused by ruptured aneurysm, may occur as the result of head trauma, often associated with nausea or vomiting, may present with photophobia, altered mental status, or focal neurologic deficit. Meningitis, encephalitis, brain abscess. Associated symptoms of include sudden fever, headache, vomiting, photophobia, stiff neck, confusion, impaired judgment, and/or altered mental status. Necessary precautions should be considered. Epidural, subdural hemorrhage. Result of head trauma. Subdural may occur with minor head trauma in patients on anticoagulation. Epidural. Classically loss of consciousness, a lucid interval, then decline in mental status as hemorrhage enlarges. Subdural. May be slowly progressive or associated with rapid symptoms. Typically older patients may present with frequent falls. Overdose patients. What are your differentials? Acetaminophen, cardiac medications, opioids, solvents, tricyclic antidepressants, other medication or illicit drug, anticholinergics, caustics, organophosphates, or stimulants. OBGYN emergencies. Consider these differentials with pregnancy and childbirth calls. Vaginal bleeding, labor, placenta previa, placental abruption, and trauma. Abdominal pain, labor, preterm or term, trauma, or other causes. Hypertension, can be pregnancy-induced. Preeclampsia or eclampsia. Psychiatric patients, keep these differential diagnoses in mind. Adverse medication reaction, anxiety disorder, drug or alcohol intoxication, drug withdrawal, hypoglycemia, infection, medication overdose, psychosis disorder or schizophrenia, trauma, bipolar disorder or depression disorder, hemodynamic instability, hypoxia, medication effect, post-ictal seizure. Additional elements you should consider with psychiatric emergencies. Excited delirium is a syndrome with paranoia, disorientation, hyperaggression, hallucinations, tachycardia, hyperthermia, and possibly increased strength. Most commonly seen in males with history of mental illness and/or drug use, especially with cocaine, crack, methamphetamine, or amphetamine use. Requires aggressive sedation with benzodiazepines and IVF. Sedation for patients noted to be extremely agitated should be emergently considered because rapid decompensation is possible. Dystonic reactions are characterized as an altered mental status, displaying features of anxiety, facial grimacing, and torticollis, rigidity of the neck. Consider medical or trauma causes for altered mental status prior to defining psychiatric condition. Combative patients resulting from acute psychosis or intoxication who are restrained in the prone position are at an increased risk for lactic acidosis, positional asphyxiation, and subsequent cardiac arrest. If physical restraints are necessary, such patients will always be placed and transported in the lateral or supine position. Always be suspicious of domestic violence and abuse. General illness. While the sick or general illness call is common, there is a wide spectrum of illness and differential diagnosis you should be thinking about. Here are some below. Apparent life-threatening event, ALTE. Behavioral disorder. Cancer. Cerebrovascular accident. Cholecystitis. Diabetic condition. Gastroenteritis. Hepatitis. HIV or AIDS. Hypertension. Infection or sepsis, inflammatory illness, medication reaction, pancreatitis, pneumonia, renal failure, sepsis, sickle cell pain crisis, ulcer disease, or viral syndrome. Stroke or CVA. Be aware of potential stroke imposters. Drug ingestion, electrolyte abnormality, environmental exposure, hypoglycemia, hypoxia, post-ictal or Todd's paralysis, psychiatric, seizure, shock, transient ischemic attack, TIA, trauma, or tumor. Follow your local guidelines for patient inclusion for code stroke type protocols involving time, onset, etc. Also consider ischemic strokes are more common in patients greater than 45 years of age. Hemorrhagic strokes can be seen in any age group. If the patient cannot provide historical information, it is imperative to obtain as much information as possible from family members or friends. Acute ischemic strokes typically do not cause seizures, hypotension, or hypoglycemia. Seizures are a common presentation for other intracerebral conditions, intracerebral or subarachnoid hemorrhage, tumor, meningitis, or other infections or toxins. Syncope or unconscious. The cause of a syncopal episode or patient unconsciousness can vary due to age, medical conditions, medications, etc. Consider the following when assessing these patients: adverse medication reaction, cardiac abnormality, MI or CHF, CNS lesion, hemorrhage, stroke, tumor, diabetes-related, hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, NKHC or DKA, drug overdose, dysrhythmia, electrolyte abnormality, environmental, hyperthermia or hypothermia, head trauma, hypotension, hypoxemia, infection, meningitis or sepsis, metabolic acidosis or alkalosis, psychiatric disorder, thyroid abnormality, toxin exposure, or vasovagal. You should also think about any patient over the age of 65 with syncope is cardiac until proven otherwise. Female patients of childbearing age consider ectopic pregnancy or other pregnancy-related complication. Consider pulmonary embolus for unexplained syncope in patient with risk factors for thromboembolic disease. Multiple causes may be present simultaneously. You should always rule out medical causes prior to determining behavioral condition as a cause. Unknown or man down. Vague call types often require more thought into what is going on, including scene safety. Try and think about the following as a start to what may be the actual cause of the call to 911. Abdominal pain, allergic reaction, behavioral problem, breathing problem, cardiac arrest, chest pain, choking, convulsions, diabetic problem, general illness, hazmat exposure, headache, heart problem, hemorrhage, overdose, pregnancy or childbirth, stroke, or traumatic injury.